With Steve Scheer, I'm Ross Reynolds. This is The Record on KUOW. Little earth tremors often shake the ground of the Northwest. Usually they're too small to feel. But could they be indicators that the big one is on the way? Well, researchers at the University of California, Santa Cruz, noticed that in Japan and Chile, small tremors shook the fault lines days before the major earthquakes hit. The researchers at UC Santa Cruz hope this will lead us down a path toward predicting earthquakes. Dr. John Vidali is skeptical. Vidali is the director of the Pacific Northwest Seismic Network at the University of Washington, and he stopped by again. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure.
So first of all, explain a little bit more about the research done by these scientists at the University of California, Santa Cruz, when they looked at these major earthquakes in Japan and Chile.
Well, they noticed more of the pattern we've been seeing for a few years now, which is that these big earthquakes in the subduction zones along the coast, such as we have here in Washington, often show slow earthquakes that release energy like a magnitude 7 or so earthquake in the course of weeks rather than a few seconds. And they noticed the pattern that some of these biggest earthquakes are preceded by slow slip earthquakes. So in particular, in Japan in 2011, there was a major slow slip episode that lasted 2 days. It released about the energy of magnitude 7 earthquake just before their magnitude 9. And in Chile, a year or two later, there was a swarm of earthquakes that lasted months, and people were wondering, was it like the case in Japan? And then sure enough, there was magnitude 8.8 earthquake as the swarm continued. So we're seeing this pattern, and we're hoping that it's general, and if we look more carefully, we can have a better idea when a giant earthquake's coming on the coast.
Well, their research referred to these as foreshocks, as in before the big shock.
Right.
You're cautious, though, about making the connection?
Well, the connection's clear. The issue is when we see some foreshocks or some slow slip or just earthquake activity, how likely is it to lead to a big earthquake? It might be one in every 100 times is the best we can forecast, or it might be that we can say with considerably more certainty when something dangerous is likely to come.
Well, with new information, you always want to know, is it actionable? It's interesting, it's intriguing, but should you do anything about it?
That's exactly right. And if it's 1 in 100, 1 in 1,000 chance of a big earthquake, there's really nothing to do. You can be on alert for a week, but people aren't going to evacuate for 1 in 1,000 chance. If you can get up to a level of 1 in 10, or especially 1 in 2 chance, then there's a lot of things people can do to be safer.
Dr. John Vidali is with me. He directs the Pacific Northwest Seismic Network. That's at the University of Washington. Now, for decades, seismologists were studying earthquake prediction, but your focus shifted in the 1980s to earthquake forecasting. What's the difference between a prediction and a forecast?
Well, our definition is a prediction means something will happen at a certain time. A forecast is that there's ever-changing probabilities, like the weather. It might have an earthquake tomorrow, or maybe it'll be next week. Maybe it'll be a 6. Maybe it'll be a magnitude 8. So forecasts are just less precise than predictions.
Why did the focus shift from calling them predictions to calling them forecasts?
Well, the history is that in the 70s, we thought we could see symptoms of particular earthquakes coming. We thought we could see the ground swelling. We thought we could see properties of the ground changing, gases coming out of the ground. And we thought we were just a few years away from just issuing predictions. It turned out we were misled. We were more accurately mistaken. These signals didn't mean an earthquake was coming. The ultimate problem we had is when it looked like the Mojave Desert was swelling up, we had something called the Palmdale Bulge, and people had press conferences, and they realized that we just made a measurement error.
Oh, really?
So it really gave a boost to earthquake prediction research, but it was not a real lead.
The problem lay in the math.
Actually, the problem laid in their changing surveying techniques in a way they didn't properly realize.
Now, in the last few days, we've seen 1.0, 2.0 earthquakes registering throughout Washington and Oregon. Are these of the slow slip variety you described in Chile?
I'm not aware of slow slip. One of the problems is that the slow slip, though, that has led to these foreshock sequences is offshore. And there's several areas that can have slow slip. And we have a good look at the part right below the Puget Sound, but we don't have a very good look at the part offshore. So actually, we don't really know what slow slip episodes are going on near us here. And we won't until we put instrumentation on the seafloor.
Well, of course, that's problematic because it's way out there. You got to go way underwater to put it down there. Is there any plan to do that?
Well, we have ideas how to do it, but it's tremendously expensive. It's on the order of hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, the Japanese have just invested $1 billion watching their seafloor, but the U.S. Doesn't feel quite the same sense of urgency because, frankly, the danger is lower here.
And is it something that you'd really have to get the national government involved in spending money on? Is it something a state could afford to do?
It would take some years of planning. You know, we're studying the methodology, but the budgets are such that it should be along the entire coast, not just one or two spots. It has to be the federal government practically.
Dr. John Vidali, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Dr. Vidali directs the Pacific Northwest Seismic Network at the University of Washington. You are listening to The Record on KUOW.